Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Jane reading for the Wednesday, February 2nd, Midland Reporter-Telegram health and wellness section. New mark set for COVID deaths. Officials, Omicron variant impacting those 50 and older. Midland Health reported January was the worst month during the nearly two-year-long pandemic for COVID deaths at Midland Memorial Hospital. Officials reported 41 deaths, which topped the 38 in November of 2020. Reporter Telegram records show 174 inpatients have died at Midland Memorial as a result of COVID-related issues. Those deaths include people who were not from Midland County, Midland Health officials have said in the past. About the COVID deaths in January, Midland Health officials offered the following information. 8 were vaccinated and 1 of those was boosted. The rest were unvaccinated. Larry Wilson, chief medical officer, said the deaths also included some who had the Delta variant at the beginning of the month. He added the sheer number of people that tested positive with the Omicron variant was the reason that the less lethal variant caused so many deaths. Officials stated that the Omicron variant was impacting those 50 and older. 84% of the 81 COVID patients as of Tuesday. Comorbidity was also a factor for the higher number of hospital older patients. Stephen Bowerman, Chief Operating Officer for Midland Health, said on Tuesday that the number of COVID inpatients is down around 19% in the last week, and that 72% were unvaccinated and only 4 had received a booster. Bowerman also cited other factors as a reason for the spike coming to a close. The positivity rate that peaked at 52% during the week of January 8th was down to 35.5% last week and 29.6% through Monday of this week. The number of tests administered at the West Campus Lab was down for the third straight week. The number of cases that the Midland Health Department reported fell by nearly 50% in 2 weeks, from 3,100 from January 9th to 15th to 1,568 January 23rd to 29th. Those needing a test are encouraged to call 68 nurse to schedule one. The number of staff members out because of COVID was down to 13. 2 weeks ago, that number was 70. Other notes from the weekly press conference included, there are 27 state workers, including 24 RNs at Midland Memorial Hospital, to help with higher numbers of inpatients through the end of the month. The next vaccine clinic will take place on February 15th from 3 to 4:30 p.m. 139 staff members have still not received their first vaccination or received an exemption to meet federal guidelines having to do with employee vaccinations. That number was 200 last week. The deadline is February 14th. This is Jane reading for the Midland Reporter Telegram for Wednesday, February 2nd. Pro-parent tip. What to do when kids want control? Hard-headed, defiant, bossy. These are a few of the words used to describe a child who seeks control. Caused by personality characteristics or trauma, when a child fights for control, it is often hard for parents to combat. Parents typically view themselves as the one who should be in control of most decisions in the parent-child relationship. If you notice your child always wanting to take the lead, dictate the rules, set the schedule, or fight the decisions you make, they may be seeking control. If you're experiencing this with your child, try finding a balanced way to share control. As a parent, there are many decisions you must make for the health and safety of your child. As the adult, you are more capable of seeing the big picture and taking multiple variables into account. However, we also make several decisions each day that are completely dictated by preference. These decisions are low stakes and are a great place to begin sharing control. Letting children choose their own clothes, hairstyle, and the order in which they complete certain routines gives them a sense of control in a way that is not dangerous or harmful. Sometimes there are decisions that do require more adult input, but can also accommodate some flexibility. For these types of decisions, try sharing control by providing two or three options, all of which would be safe and acceptable. When children feel like they have a voice and a choice, they do not feel as strong of a need to grab control in less functional ways like defiance or tantrums. When you are unable to let your child make the decision or have control due to the nature of the decision, be sure to explain why. Maybe the decision involves risk and danger, or you are balancing too many variables that they are unaware of. It is okay to tell your child that a particular decision is a parent choice. Taking the time to explain to your control-seeking child may help them understand and relinquish more easily. Seeking control is a very useful skill when developed appropriately. Most leaders demonstrate a strong sense of control over various aspects of their organizations. For this reason, it is important to help develop a child's ability to make decisions by sharing control with them, while also maintaining enough control to keep them health and safety. As children get older, their need for control will also increase. This is a natural progression in the child's development and should be recognized as such. Parents can aid this developmental shift by continuing to release control and give kids the experience of making decisions. If kids have enough practice making small decisions and taking control of low-stakes situations, they will be better equipped when faced with tougher or high-stakes decisions in their future. This is Jane, reading for the Wednesday, February 2nd, Midland Reporter Telegram, Health and Wellness section. Midlander runs for a cause as he prepares for 100-mile race. Local runner Abraham Bajil will run a 100-mile marathon Sunday to benefit the West Texas chapter of the Alzheimer's Association. Bajil runs ultramarathons, which are more than 31 miles long. This race is more than three times the distance of an ultra-marathon. It will take place in Huntsville at the State Park with 5 20-mile trail loops. "This wasn't a personal issue or cause at first," he said. "I saw the Alzheimer's Association group during their proclamation day at City Hall. As a runner, I have been working with trying to bless others with my ability to run long distances. At that moment, I chose to partner with the Alzheimer's Association, and after that is when I started to get more involved and learned about how Alzheimer's has been affecting individuals within my inner circle. The run is an official ultra run hosted by Tejas Trails and sponsored by Hoka 1-1. It starts at 6 a.m. on Saturday, and Bajil will have 30 hours to complete the 100 miles at the Huntsville State Park. This is his second 100-mile race to compete in, with his first race happening in August in Colorado. Director of Development with the Alzheimer's Association West Texas Chapter, Julie Gray, said Bajil is helping to promote awareness for Alzheimer's disease and other dementia, as well as raising funds for advanced care, support, and research efforts of the Alzheimer's Association. Bajil has set a goal of raising $6,000, with more than $4,000 having been raised as of Tuesday. He will run to commemorate the Alzheimer's Association Summer Solstice Fundraiser, the longest day, when the day with the most light is used by people worldwide to engage in fundraising activities to help fight Alzheimer's. What we do at the association is that we take those raised funds and we use them locally, Grace said. We give back to the community with the educational programs, conferences, and support groups. Grace said it is amazing to have a partner in the community willing to do so much to raise awareness about Alzheimer's disease. Today, an estimated 50 million people are living with Alzheimer's, including more than 6 million Americans. In the U.S., more than 1 million friends and family members are providing their care, Gray said. Bajil is originally from San Angelo, but moved to Midland more than 20 years ago. He is currently the Director of Engineering at Midland Memorial Hospital. He started running in 2018 while struggling with anxiety for many years. My anxiety started to get worse as I was getting older and working my job in healthcare, he said. I really needed an outlet, which turned out to be running. Running became a love and passion. I went from a 5K to a 50K to a 50-miler, then a 70-miler, and have finally started to compete in 100-milers. He wouldn't be able to race 100 miles without the support of his friends and family. Midland Athletic Company is also helping to sponsor Bajil during his run. Even though I'm the one running, I can't do it alone, he said. It's become a team sport, and I like that it's very close-knit activity for my loved ones that helped me to get to the finish line. My wife has been extremely helpful and patient and knows that I get kind of obsessed with activity and go a little overboard. His supporters provide him with food, hydration, and clothing while he is running for 30 hours. He says they will catch naps, but someone always has to be available when he gets to a checkpoint to refuel. These long runs can be tiring and painful, but they don't compare to the struggles that our loved ones with Alzheimer's and their caregivers go through on a daily basis, he said. Bajil is also running to honor Bubba Adkins, Evelyn Torres, and Robert Kochke, friends affected by Alzheimer's. This is Jane reading for the Midland Reporter Telegram for Wednesday, February 2nd, from the Health and Wellness section. Chapman wins Daisy Award at Midland Memorial Hospital. Rachel Chapman, a nurse in the endoscopy unit, is the latest recipient of the Daisy Award, according to Midland Health. Chapman was nominated for the prestigious award by a patient she served while working and supporting the outpatient infusion center during the COVID Delta surge. The patient wrote the following: Rachel is amazing, very caring and thoughtful with everyone she encounters. I'm a very difficult IV stick. She listened patiently and intently while I explained my issues and fears. She then talked with me, not at me, through the whole thing, gave me choices to watch or not, to have her count to three or not. Then it was totally painless stick. I watched Rachel treat other patients in the room with me, and she was just as wonderful with them. I also watched her work as part of the team in the center and was very impressed by her helpful and let's get it done attitude, always with a smile on her face. I feel quite blessed to have had Rachel take care of me this morning. The Daisy Award is an international nursing recognition program created to honor nurses who provide extraordinary, compassionate care. Midland Memorial Hospital is one of more than 4,900 healthcare facilities and schools of nursing worldwide that recognize their nurses with this prestigious award. Anyone in the facility can nominate a nurse, be it a patient or visitor, another nurse, physician, or any other staff member. Anyone who experiences or observes extraordinary compassionate care being provided by a nurse. It is because of Rachel's compassionate and caring efforts that her patient experienced a level of care that exemplifies the impact nurses have in creating an environment where patients and families feel at home. Have you recently had an extraordinary experience with a nurse at Midland Memorial Hospital? Please submit a DAISY Award nomination at the following link. https://www.midlandhealth.org/main/DAISY-award-nomination-form. That is https://www.midlandhealth.org/main/DAISY-award-nomination-form.
This is the oil page. This article is entitled OPEC Plus is Expected to Ratify Oil Supply Hike by Grant Smith, Sharon Cho, and Salma Al-Wardani, Bloomberg. OPEC and its allies are expected to approve another modest oil output increase this week, yet once again struggled to deliver all of the extra supplies into a red-hot crude market. The recovery in fuel consumption from the pandemic continues apace, leaving plenty of room for the 23-nation coalition led by Saudi Arabia and Russia to boost production. But members from Nigeria to Russia have been running out of spare capacity and struggling to revive their output after years of cuts and underinvestment. Even as delegates from about half the coalition's members say they expect OPEC Plus to ratify another 400,000-barrel-a-day supply hike for March, markets are tightening and propelling prices above $90 a barrel. All respondents in a Bloomberg survey of traders, analysts, and refiners also predicted an increase, but doubted it will be achieved in full. In November, the group only implemented about 60%. I think they'll continue the way they're doing it, with another incremental boost, said Torbjorn Tornqvist, chief executive officer of commodity trading house Gunvor Group. But OPEC Plus may be losing control of the market, because now we're back in a situation where we're watching what the spare capacity is going to be. This is a pressing concern for consuming nations and central banks as they reckon with an inflationary surge that's not just causing pain for motorists, but also contributing to a cost-of-living crisis for millions. With the approach of U.S. midterm elections, there's particular peril for President Joe Biden, who has sought to tame fuel costs to little avail. Only Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, and Iraq have enough spare production capacity to deliver meaningful increases, Tornqvist said. For other members of the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, depressed investment has taken its toll. Angola's aging deep water fields are in decline, while Nigeria's pipelines are plagued by leaks. Even Russia, the second biggest member of the alliance, has been unable to increase in recent months following a decline in drilling. With consumption bouncing back and production constrained elsewhere in the world, a global market that was expecting to be in surplus this quarter could actually be undersupplied. Prices are already at the highest since 2014, gaining extra momentum from renewed geopolitical tensions. For some traders, a return to $100 a barrel has taken on an air of inevitability. This is the Other Voices page. This column is entitled The Texas Crackdown on Voter Fraud by State Representative Brooks Landgraf. This column is Letter to the Editor. It is entitled Student Loan Bailout? No. I don't know about you, but I'm not in the mood to subsidize loan obligations of other adults who signed contracts to repay in order that they could attend a post-high school institution of higher learning. Are those taxpayers without higher education to pay? Are those degreed taxpayers who paid their way also to pay? Are those taxpayers not yet in college also to pay? this flagged issue has appeared again. I responded to my U.S. senators and representative. Federal student loan FSL forgiveness. The latest Democrat position on student loan forgiveness on the news this morning has stirred me. Rather than have us, the taxpayers, bail out students' contractual obligations, I suggest two options. One, students pay their own debts obligated under their adult signatures. Two, universities and other post-high school institutions eligible to receive monies from such student loans refund up to $50,000 of each student's loan. Number one is best and most responsible. Number two is next best because the receiving institution has enriched itself by plowing FSL cash into huge and growing endowments. Any loan-bearing student who does not complete a degree program still owes the debt. Any bulk solids, BS degreed students, still owe the debt for such worthless degrees created to keep them enrolled. And I did not sign for such loan, and therefore am not responsible to pay it. I attended colleges and universities in pursuit of my degree before, during, then after military service under the GI Bill and my dime. My degree had utility in that it credentialed me to teach school and later knowledgeably work in industry. I am against taxpayer-funded bailout of student loans. Signed, Doug Moss, Odessa.
To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach. Recommended amount of sugar. Dear Dr. Roach, I have questions about the nutritional facts label on food products, specifically as it relates to sugar. The labels now provide a percentage daily value for added sugars. Doing the math, for example, tick 10 grams of added sugars equals 20% of the daily value, indicates that the daily value of added sugars for a 2,000 calorie daily diet is 50 grams. I assume this is not a goal, but rather an amount to try not to exceed. Less is better. Would zero be best? There is no daily value information on the labels for total sugar. The Food and Drug Administration website says no daily reference value has been established for total sugars because no recommendation has been made for the total amount to eat in a day. I assume this should not be interpreted to mean that any amount of natural sugar is okay. For example, just 8 ounces of orange juice has 22 grams of total sugar, with none being added sugar. That seems like a lot of sugar, even if it is natural sugar. Even if there are no formal guidelines, in your opinion, is there a limit to the amount of naturally occurring sugar that one should strive to stay under each day? Answer. To your body, sugar that is naturally contained in food is sometimes exactly the same chemically as sugar that's added. A glass of orange juice has just about the same amount of sugar as a sugar-sweetened soft drink. Your body can't tell the difference, so I recommend consuming only modest amounts of fruit juices. 8 ounces is about 40% of the total recommended sugar intake for a person for a day. Sugar contained in whole fruits is absorbed more slowly to the fiber content of the fruit, and most authorities believe that it does not have the same health risk as consuming essentially pure sugar in liquid form. A good-sized apple has 20 to 25 grams of sugar, but the same amount of sugar in an apple and in an apple juice are not treated the same way by your body. For example, whole fruit doesn't quickly raise blood sugar in the way that fruit juice or soda does. This is mostly because the fiber in the fruit slows absorption of the sugar, and fiber is absent in the juice. Nevertheless, I don't recommend large amounts of fruit daily.
This is the Dear Abby column. Divorced father hopes to re-enter daughter's life. Dear Abby, my ex-wife and I were divorced 7 years ago. It was my doing. I had two affairs, the second of which resulted in my current marriage. I have always regretted my actions and the pain it caused, and I vowed to never make that mistake again. My ex is happily remarried, but here's the problem. We have a daughter in her late 20s who seemed to adjust to our situation quickly. However, her mother has turned our daughter against me to the point where she has cut off all contact. It has been nearly 3 years, and it eats away at me every day. Her mother has completely brainwashed her. I recently found out my daughter is pregnant, which has made it worse. As it stands, I'll have no contact with my grandchild while my ex rubs it in my face. Abby, I've never said a bad word about my ex, even though I know she's not a good person. She has used people, stolen, cheated, and lied most of her life, and apparently continues to do so. She's told outright lies about me to our daughter and others. I have admitted my misdeeds, but my ex can't or won't do the same. I want to expose her, but I know I can't if I want any hope of reconciliation with my daughter. How can I talk to my daughter, at least to get closure? Signed, Sad Dad in Ohio. Dear Dad, send your daughter a registered letter telling her how much you love her and congratulating her on her pregnancy. At the same time, without pointing fingers at your ex-wife, which might only further alienate your daughter, explain that some of the things she may have been told about you aren't true, and you would like to discuss them with her. Then, cross your fingers and hope she agrees. Dear Abby, I'm a married woman in my early 40s with two small children. I am blessed to enjoy a close relationship with my parents, both of whom are now in their mid to late 70s. My siblings and I all live within 15 minutes of them, and we spend a lot of time together for holidays, special occasions, and general get-togethers. Lately, I can't stop thinking about my parents dying. It will be awful once they are gone. It has reached a point where if one of them gets a cold, I'm terrified it will turn into something more serious. I'm also scared that something else traumatic might happen, and I dread receiving that phone call. I don't know how to stop thinking like this. I know death is a part of life, but I don't want every day to be clouded by thoughts of something bad happening. Is there any way to have a healthier mindset? Signed, Loving Daughter in Texas. Dear daughter, there is more than one way to approach this. The first would be to turn off the news for a week and see if it lowers your level of anxiety, which may stem from the incessant drumbeat of reporting about COVID. If that doesn't help, then it might benefit you to talk with a licensed mental health practitioner for help to ease your anxiety by getting to the root of what is causing it. If your parents are in good health, they may be with you for many years to come. It would be a shame to waste that precious time because of fears of what will one day happen to us all. You can write to Dear Abby at dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069. Her column is distributed by Universal Press Syndicate.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.